you couldn't put nothing in their window. They were censored before they left the ship. But I had an aunt, she worked in the Admiralty during the war, and she knew where my ship was. She knew all that, but she wouldn't tell no one. All she kept on saying to my sister, right, you know, she said, well, you know, all she used to say, they're all right, they're all right. That's all she used to say.
Did you have a girlfriend at that time?
Did what?
Did you have a girlfriend at that time?
Go where?
A girlfriend.
I had a girlfriend, yeah.
Were you able to see her or keep in contact with her?
Yeah, oh yeah, I married her.
During the war?
Yeah, that, well, 45, yeah. Well, 45, yeah, that's a wedding photo up there. Yeah, I married her. I knew her quite a time, you know, before the war. I knew her, you know, and never just said hello to her. But when I was on leave, I used to live with my sister, and I stood at the gate one day, and she came by, and I said hello, and then I waited, and then she came back, and we spoke, and my sister called me for dinner. And I was still out there when she called me in for my tea. Talked it all that time. And then I took her out to a show. And we got married in August. I got married in August 45. And my friend got married in November the same year. And he had one son. And I had one son, or we had one son. Yeah.
How did you keep in contact with your wife to be throughout the war?
Only by letters.
Did you see her much?
No. No. The only time I saw her was when we came back from the Russian convoys in 43, when we were at London Dock. And we had about a fortnight to leave. And that's when I went, you know, saw her and that. We went out. We went to a wedding. One of our chaps got married. And we went to his wedding.
James Gifford, Reel 3. It must have been difficult trying to maintain a relationship in those circumstances.
What, with my girlfriend?
Yeah, throughout those years.
No, well, it wasn't difficult, you know. We used to send letters and that. We used to get regular letters, you know. I mean, no, it wasn't difficult. We sort of trust one another and that, and we spoke about, or she did, she used to speak about when we get married, she liked a little boy and she'd like to dress it in yellow and brown and, you know, and all this and that, you know, letters we used to keep in contact with, you know, and she used to tell me what's going on there, you know, and that, but I couldn't tell her nothing, you know, anything about where I was or anything like that, but I had to make some stories up, you know, well not stories but true things, you know, what I like, you know, and that. Yeah, we always kept in with letters and all that, you know, and then she said, oh, you know, we're getting married, you know, and we planned it by letters, our marriage. We planned that by letters, going backwards and forwards, you know. Of course, actually, I got married twice. To the same girl. I got married. We had to go to Westminster Abbey, a place upstairs, to get married. Of course, I wanted a, you know, quick marriage. So we had to go there first, and we got married there. with a license, right, you know. And then they said, he said, if you want to get married in a church, you take this and go to see the local clergyman and he arrange it, which we did do. We went there and saw the clergyman and told him we would like to get married, you know, and we got married in the in St Mary's Church up the top. Yeah.
I joined HMS Suffolk in December 1940.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to the ship after that? Did you go straight on to convoy duties?
Yeah, more or less. Well, in January, yeah. We were in January. There was only a few of us on board in December of Chatham. And then in December, the whole crew come aboard, officers and skippers and all that. And that's when we set sail to for the Russian convoys, around about January 1941.
Were you issued with any special kit to deal with the weather conditions?
Yeah, we was, well, we didn't wear them, but we was issued with winter gear, that which was thick, woolly, long pants, you know, long johns, very thick woolies and all that. But we never used them because, actually, I've always said this, the cold up the Russian there, up the Arctic and that, it didn't seem so cold as what it is when it's winter here, because here is a damp cold. There it seems to have a dry cold. So, and one of the chaps here, he used to, if you gave them to him, he used to undo them and make mats for them, make and send them home.
Did the cold weather conditions affect your job or life on board in any
way? No, didn't affect us. No. The only time we got was when we went out to the Pacific, we got paid a little bit of extra money for working in the galley in the heat. That's the only time we got, you know. But when we was at the Arctic, the Russian convoys, we never, no, didn't make no difference. Because it was still warm in the galley.
What about when you were doing your action station?
Well, we were all done up for the occasion, wasn't we? We had our coats on, you know, and that. Overcoats we had issued with, you know, and different things. And
was your mess dry?
No, not always. No, not up in the Arctic. No, when we used to go along, we used to get the sea, and it used to go down like that. The ship used to go like that, and come up like that, and it used to come and leak right down in the mess deck. And there was a bit of flooding down there, and all the crockery used to go, used to tie down. They used to say, tie down, rough sea. Yeah, that's the only time.
Were you ever sick in those conditions?
Was I what?
Ever seasick in those conditions?
Yeah, seasick. Yeah, when I first went out there, I was bad. I was bad.
I
wouldn't tell you what. We had a free badger on board. When I say a free badger, free strike. He'd been in the Navy a long time, you know. I won't tell you what he done to me. Because it's.
Go on.
Well, it's. I know you're not eating, but, well, I was seasick. I used to be rushing up on the upper deck, you know. And anyway, so one morning we were sitting down, we had bacon the next night, breakfast. And he was in the next mess, like sailor, but he was in the chef mess was here, you know, we were the same, you know. And I was having my breakfast, and all of a sudden, I'm trying to eat this, you know, and I'm feeling a bit. And I'm trying to eat it, and all of a sudden, he called me. He said, Jim, boy. And I said, I looked up. Oh. He had a piece of bacon rind hanging down in Well, I told you I didn't want to tell you.
Can you explain where it was hanging?
I couldn't. Oh, I had to run up the upper deck quick. Oh, and I just made it. Oh, one of the chaps said, "What'd you do that for?" He said, "Well, it's a joke, wasn't it?" oh dear, yeah, I never forget that. No.
Can you tell me about the Bismarck action? What you remember?
Well, we were doing the patrol, and we got a message that the German battleship Bismarck was out to sea, and if we saw it, we got to shadow it, so the heavier force come up, and we were shadowing it, and we lost it once in the mist, and anyway, and then we lost it, and when we got it, one of our lookouts, one of the sailors, what's the name, Yuri name was, he got the medal, it was Queen and that, Earl the King, for sighting it. He sighted it, he got a medal for it. And then we shadowed it, you know. Of course she saw us and she fired on us, but instead of it we went over and it dropped miles, you know, right over and didn't hit us, thank God. You know, and we just opened fire on it, but we knew we couldn't do no good to it. Of course, it wasn't sinkable by gunfire, you know. And then the heavy of Norfolk come up, and then the Horde, and all of them come up, and then the Navy come up, so getting it. And after a few days, you know, and I was on the upper deck, and me and a couple more, like, we was on the upper deck, and all of a sudden we saw this ship on the right out on the horizon, and we saw it go up, boom! And we thought it was the other ship with the cruiser Prince George. But we learned, instead of that, it was the Hood. And there was only three people saved on that, because they got blown off the upper deck. And there's only three people saved on that, out of so many hundred. And we had a court inquiry on board the ship, because they thought it might have been sabotaged, because I think she had to come away with some workmen on board. Had to rush out, with it, and the workmen had to stay on board.
What was the mood like on your ship when the Hood was sunk?
Well, you know, you just, what can you do? You just felt sorry, you know, for the men, that's all. You know, that's all you could do, couldn't you? And they was upset about it, you know, and all they were saying, we're next, you know. I used to say, don't say that, you know. But as it happens, we was lucky.
Anything else you personally remember from that time, from that action?
No, not really. No. No, only that. That's the only thing what happened, you know, apart from us sort of shadowing it and catching it, and you know, and all that. I mean, we kept away from it, you know, mind you, their guns were so powerful, you know, the distance their guns could fire, you know. I mean, I believe that if it had got away, it would have sunk half of our Navy. But that's the only way they had to do it, to put, as we used to say, Tim Fish for a torpedo. The Dorsetshire put a torpedo. They injured her, the guns, you know. They made her lose all and all that. But eventually they sent the Dorsetshire in to put, when she was lying in rest, to put a torpedo in her.
The Suffolk was shadowing the Bismarck for some days.
A few days, yeah.
Were you at action stations?
Yeah, all the time, yeah.
And what was your role during that time?
Doing the 4-inch guns.
Oh, And what about your job as a chef?
Oh, we go down and they had other sailors there helping them, you know, but we had to go down and make cocoa for them and all that, or sandwiches or something like that, soup, you know, to relieve the people.
Was the atmosphere tense when you were chasing Bismarck?
Oh yeah, very tense, wasn't it? Yeah, very tense.
What about sleep? How much sleep were you able to get during that time?
Oh, I think what it was, you see, they had so many on the guns and that, they just took it in turns, you know, to take go sleep. Not much, but not a lot. I mean, my friend, he was down in a magazine. Now, if we'd have got hit, he wouldn't have been able to come up, because they'd shut them doors down there and flood it out, in case, you know. So he was in a bad way, you know, down there. But he stuck it well, though.
And what was the reaction on board when Bismarck had been sunk?
Oh, they couldn't believe it, could they? As they always thought, they thought it was a German cruiser. You're pretty sure, and that's what we thought as well. You know, everybody thought it was that until the skipper piped over, like, the hood had been sunk, and that was it. I mean, I saw it go up. Me and another chap, we saw it go up.
Can you describe that?
Hmm?
Can you describe that in a bit more detail?
Not really, it just went zoom. That's all you saw was smoke. That's all you saw.
What happened to the Suffolk after the Bismarck?
We came, after a while, we done a bit of work up there, and in 1943 we came home to London, to the London docks, Silvertown, and we had leave and we had a paint up, Mediterranean colours, paint up, you know, camouflaged and that, which we was at first, but we had a different colour. And we got leave, and then we went out to Burma, bombard the Burma coast. And on the way out, we stopped at Freetown, never went ashore. Not a lot. Freetown, Durban, you know, Colombo, and then we. And then after that, we. When the war was up, when they piped the war was over Germany and that, you know, we brought some soldiers from Burma on our ship, took them out to Bombay to get the troop ship home to the UK. They were going home to the UK. And we treated them well on board. They couldn't believe it, you know, we gave them cigarettes, you know, rock and rum and that, you know. And then we went back, and then we went out into Australia to Fremantle, that's the docks there, and we waited tied up there. We had a bit of leave there, and me and my mate we went to Australia to this place where they. You know, they told us to go to this place, and they put you up with people for the week or fortnight to stay, and they asked you if you wanted an hectic time or a quiet time, you know, we asked for a quiet time, and they put us on with this couple in Australia, in Perth, and which was quite nice. They looked after us very well, and you know. And then we was waiting for two troop ships to come in. One was American and one was New Zealand. And then we took them to Bombay, for the they was waiting for this, you know, to go back home, I suppose. Yeah, and then after that. Part of that, I think we 44 or something. We went back to Liverpool docks and we paid off.
Can I just ask you about your time in the Pacific? Life must have been very different down there from the Russian convoys.
Oh, well, yeah, a lot warmer.
And you said you got some extra money for working.
Coppers really, you know. Extra coppers for working in the heat, in the galley, when we was out there.
Did your clothing change when you were out in the heat?
Oh, yeah. Well, we was issued with, white suits. You know, I've got a photo of a white when I had my white suit on. We went ashore, you know.
When you were cooking, did you have to wear any...
Oh, when we was cooking, we wore white suits, you know, white jacket and white coat, and white hats, you know, chef's hats, and that.
Anything else that you remember about that time, about the living conditions whilst you were in Sydney?
No, not really. You know what I mean, on board a ship. No, it was quite calm and that, you know.
Did you sleep in your mess or did you sleep on the deck?
Oh, well, when we, I was one of them as well, yeah. When we was early turn, like when I say early turn, when we was, we used to turn to at 12 o'clock to take over, and then we come off and then we had to turn to at 4 o'clock in the morning. Well, I used to lay on the foam and go asleep. I didn't trouble to, you know, hang my hammock up and go asleep in my hammock. I always used to go on the foam. But then, you know, of course the time we went to bed, you know, well, I say, couldn't stay up too late. But now and again, if I was early turn like that, I used to lay on the phone, right, you know, or lie on the table, put your guest mask as your pillow.
Did the diet change when you were in the Pacific?
No.
Same as ever?
No, never changed really, you know. We still had the same meals.
What about recreation? There must have been more opportunities for recreation in a warm climate.
Well, yeah. Well, as I say, out there, we used to play water polo. On the side of, you know, I mean, the ship used to be anchored out, and we had the gold posts hanging down, you know, and we used to play water polo. So many of us, you know, make two teams up. We used to go down the side, you know, in the sea and play water polo. You know, that sort of thing we used to do. But no, I don't think it'd be altered regardless of anything else when we was out there.
What about shore leave?
Well, we did. we went ashore at Durban. We had a bit of fortnight leave at Durban, the ship's company, like, half went and then half, you know, paid them all. That's all the places we stayed at. I mean, we went to different places, but I think we had a bit of leave at Colombo. We went to Bombay, only a few hours, you know, but at Durban we had a fortnight's leave. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Apart from the bombardment of Burma, was the Suffolk engaged in any other action during that time?
Not out in the Pacific, no. No. No, we just, I think the planes went to take photos, I guess. The Japanese, you know, layout and that, and why they were that, we were bombarding the coast, like, you know, now and again.
What happened to you when you returned to England and the ship was paid off?
Well, I came home and I got, as I say, I got married in 45. And I had me leave and I went back to Chatham Barracks and thinking that I was going to get demobbed, of course my number came up, and the paymaster commander, he wouldn't let me go. He said, no, we can't afford to let you go yet, and of course they're short staff and all that. So I had to stay on and I didn't get demobbed until 1946. But I was married in 45.
During the time that you stayed on, were you at Chatham?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. I went to Sheerness. I went to Sheerness to cook just for only a few people. What was there? An officer and a couple of POs and some matos, you know. Very, very small. Come, you know, and I was there for quite a time until I had to go back to Chatham, and that's when I got demobbed from Chatham.
Can you describe the procedure, the demob procedure?
Well, we had to go to this place called Collingwood, that's near Chatham there, and we had to wait there, and we got there, and it was late at night. And we had to sleep on this place where the windows was broken and everything. And it was really cold. You know, the wind was coming in. But we had to stop there till the next morning, till we got demobbed. And we went in this place and the next morning, and it was all laid out, you know, with clothes and that. And as you went round, so you got your suit and you got your whatever, you know, different things. And then they put it all in a cardboard box, and then we came out and got on the coach to Chatham Station, and there was these chaps, a few chaps along Chatham Station on the platform, asking you if you wanted to sell your, you know, your cardboard box, your demob stuff. I said, no, I don't want to do it.
What was your demob clothing like? What did you choose?
Oh, well, you know, I had a suit, a raincoat, and we never got shoes because we had shoes in the Navy, you know, and shirts, you know, ties and that, you know, and you know, that's about all. Of course, we had most of our stuff, like shirts. In the Navy, but yeah, it's quite nice. Not a nice raincoat. Yeah.
Did you find it difficult adjusting to civilian life?
Well, no, not really. No, not really. Because I don't know. I just accepted it that I'm out, and that's it. There was one occasion when I was on leave at home. I came out and I think I was going over. I was going over across the road to get some cleaning, I think. So, and I had my uniform on, but I never had my tie on. I had my uniform on, you know, and a silk scarf round my neck. And as it happened, this is Stoke Newington, when I lived in Stoke Newington, I still live it. People there adopted a destroyer, and they were having it brought through the streets, and something on like not the destroy itself, but a model of it, like. And there were these sailors, not sailors, they was cadets. And there was this officer standing by the corner up there as I come along, and he pulled me up and he said to me, "Do you know you're improperly dressed?" So I said, "Am I?" So he said, "Yeah." He said, "You've got a silk scarf round your neck," he said. He said, "You should have a tie on." So of course I turned around and said to him, I said, "Now look here." I said, "I've just come back," I said, "from doing Russian convoys," I said, "in the Pacific," I said, "and you're telling me that I'm improperly dressed." I said, "I think it'd do you good to go in the Navy, in the proper Navy." I really upset. And anyway, after a while he apologised. He said, "I'm sorry," and then he asked me if I wanted to go in the procession, you know. He said, "We'd like to have you in the procession." I said, "No, I'm sorry. I said, I've got other things to do." You know. And that, yeah, that was funny, that was.
Did you miss the Navy?
I did, yeah. I did, really. I did. I always said that if I hadn't got married, I think I might have signed on for a bit longer. I did like it. I always say, even young boys, you know, when I talk to young boys, I often say to them, you know, "Why don't you join the Navy? It's a lovely life," which it is, especially in peacetime. I mean, you know, I mean, I didn't miss the Navy, you know. I missed the company and, you know, and the family. Yeah, I did. Well, I've always said, if I hadn't got married, I would have joined up again. Well, you know, not joined up. I would have stayed on for a few more years. I went ashore to go through the gas chambers as an exercise with your mask on. I was a deputy at shore, and then when I came back, one of the checks says to me, "There's a lot of mail in the Master at Arms office for you, Jack, Jim." So I said, "Oh, all right." So I went and got them, and coming back, I was so excited that I jumped over the bulkhead door, and I hit my head on the top and split it open, and I was lying there when the Commander Rounds was on. He came along and he wanted, "What's that man doing down there?" And it was covered in blood. And they got me in the sick bay, and the next minute I woke up and I saw this surgeon, doctor, patting me forward, and he told me what happened, what I'd done. And he told me that I would have 4 stitches in my head, in my forehead. He said, "But it might not show with the creases of your forehead." And I was in a sick bay for a couple of days.